Hey, I'm Hemming Nelson.
I'm Brian Kessler.
You're supposed to say that quicker. Hi, I'm Hemming Nelson.
I'm Brian Kessler.
I'm Hemming Nelson. And welcome to the Digital Engagement Forecast. Today's episode is brought to you by our new beverage sponsor, Charity Engine. Charity Engine is a nonprofit software platform for online donor management, fundraising, events, and communication. But I think we wouldn't be lying if we said that of all the solutions out there, there's not many people that do a better job if you're thinking about bringing all your data for your CRM onto one platform.
And if your CRM is driving you to drink, give Charity Engine a call.
And that's charityengine.net, not charityengine.com. And now, here's our conversation with Hussein Nashirvani and Sean Romani. Where's your office?
In Tysons.
Okay.
Which is easy to say, how could you have good office space in Tysons?
Or how could you have bad office space in Tysons?
Yeah, we're right in the tech bubble. Yeah. You look out the window, you see Leidos, you see Oracle, I mean, you see everybody right around us. So
it's very inspirational for you.
It kind of is. When you're there late at night, it kind of is.
Yeah, now you got glowing. Metro, too.
Yeah, we have Metro, too.
Is that like, but if you go to like one of the local coffee shops or bars at night, like, is that the talk, though? Like, is it?
Not really.
Are those people staying around, or is everybody?
Everybody heads out pretty quickly. Yeah. The ones who go out to iCities or whatever it's called, you know, they're going there to pick up the hookers. So, yeah, it is what it is.
I didn't know there were hookers.
Now we're recording, though.
No, we are recording now.
So no, they are. There are hookers in Dyson Square. 703-555-HOOKER. We have everything in our system is mobile and responsive. We give full access so that... The way I describe it to people is we don't want to be coin-operated. And what I mean by that is, in an ideal world, I want to be a software provider and not a services provider. Now, I'm starting to find that that's not how it works in this industry. They want you to sell them the software and hold their hands and put them to sleep at night. But for the ones who sort of take ownership, I don't think there's a better system in the marketplace right now.
And I remember when I was looking at Charity Engine, your UI did seem a cut above the rest. Did you work with a firm to do that? Or
yeah, not? A company. So I invest in a lot of software companies. Mm-hmm. Another company I had invested in built the UI for us.
It was beautiful. I mean, just as far as this space goes, the other options out there?
Yeah, I think it's a little what they've built and what they've designed. Is it's a little bit 2012.
But was that when it was designed?
Yeah, that was the problem. It started designing in 2012. Yeah. But they didn't. Good design is not about what it looks like. It's about what it could be when things change. Mm-hmm. And the system we have. I mean, look, again. Being the tallest midget doesn't mean anything in the world of basketball, right? You're still a short fuck. And the problem is that they built a system that was... They didn't think about the world and the design in a, where am I going to go? Mm-hmm. They looked at the world and said, this is where we're at today, so let's catch them up to the 21st century or whatever it is. They're good designers. They're well-connected. But they're not doing that next level of stuff where you're like, this is something very unique and different about these guys. Their synapses aren't firing any different than you and I, and that's unfortunate because they, with all the opportunities they have because of who they know, I was surprised that they couldn't come up and be more creative. I like it, and again, you know, whatever analogy, tallest midget, best hockey player in Mexico, whatever. But that's you don't want to compare yourself to that. You want to compare yourself to, you know, some of these. I mean, there's some software out there. These guys are building UIs that are, I mean, you're
clunky.
Clunky.
That's the word.
Yeah, I mean, the UI is not very competitive in this space.
No, and ours is far and away. It's responsive. There's bugs in it. I mean, we only released it last year, so there's still bugs in it.
Near your administrative side, also on mobile.
Yeah. Look, I mean, we're, you know, I think, I look at software sort of at the holistic view, I think the best way to think about software is sort of like a hiking path, right? The more it gets used, the better it is for hiking, right? Assuming you don't want to be, you know, the trailblazer. And our software, we've only really been a software company for about a year and a half, which is to say a product software company as opposed to a company that builds software. Mm-hmm. And what we're starting to see is the paths that have been walked a lot with our older clients, I mean, they're solid, right? It's been tested, different models, people have tried to break it, and so it's really nice. As we bring on new clients, they have different business processes, orientations, et cetera. And I think that path is still getting adjusted. And we don't have a good QA process yet because you're a small software company. And so you need to have when we go and talk with these clients and these prospects, we tell them, look, this is how you got to think about software. And I think to a certain extent, they don't want to hear the truth. They kind of like to be lied to. And that's unfortunate, because what's happening is it's stagnated the entire industry as it relates to technology. They don't have an ability to see how much better it could be. They don't understand, or they don't connect the dots between, you know, if you suddenly gave them the original iPhone, nobody would even, and that said, this is the next generation, nobody would ever use it. Right, they don't see how progression has come, both from a design standpoint, from an interaction standpoint, usability, functionality, operationally, and I think that's the problem with software in the nonprofit space. We're trying to change it, but that hiking trail is steep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, we
have a bit of a low budget operation here, and our mics have to be pretty close to our mouths, so. If you guys could just drag those over. We're here today with Sean Rahmani and Hussein Nashirvani.
Close enough.
Okay. How do you say it?
Nashirvani.
Okay. That was actually not too far away. Good.
You said the first name right, which was nice, actually.
Well, do people get that wrong?
Hussein, Jose.
Hassan.
Hassan. Sean. Sometimes they just call me Sean. It's a great name.
It's Arabic. It works. It's like,
yeah. But you guys are with Charity Engine.
We are.
But your LinkedIn profile says BIS Global. What's the relationship between those two companies?
So BIS Global is the name of the company. Charity Engine is the name of the software we sell to the nonprofit space.
Okay. And are you guys doing other things too at BIS?
We were, but now we're almost focused exclusively on the nonprofit.
And that's
space.
What you were saying.
Yep.
Basically, for the past year, you've
yep.
been a
year, about
software
2 years,
focused
yep.
company.
Yep.
Is that different for you? Is that what you've historically been doing?
No, I've historically come.
By the way, that was the beer that Hossein bought us.
Sean, my name is Sean. Okay.
Thank you for the beer. If you're the first guest that's brought beer for us, we're drinking the Goose Summer Ale.
Well, we want to be brought back, and I know that I was told that's the best way to make sure you get invite back.
Well, it's the best way for actually Brian and I to ask interesting questions, is to relax a little bit.
So what was the first question? I completely forgot.
The first question was software development. Is that something you were familiar with before you started that?
Yeah, so my personal background, I have started a couple of CRM in software companies. So I understand the productization of software pretty well, and how to build it. What we've found that's interesting, and you know, Sean could probably speak to it better than I can, is bringing in people like Sean who have experience in the nonprofit space, so they can tell us, you know, we need this button here. This is how this should work. If you want to have something that is applicable to the biggest market share or market percentage, you really need it to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And so he's been, you know, and we're bringing people who have expertise in now, rather than just for, you know, our personal experiences.
How big is the team over there now?
We're 24, 25.
Yeah. 24, 25.
Wow. And you guys are out in Tyson's.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And you, so Sean, what's your job at the company then?
My official title is SQL database developer. Which basically is code for during the implementation process, after Hussein has brought a client on, it's handed off to the implementation team. And at that point, I do a first pass at the data that comes in and kind of do an analysis and work with the client, with the rest of the implementation team. And we get the data put into the system historically, operationally, financially, whatever they need, so that they can go live with us.
Is that the biggest barrier you find for the customers adopting?
Hossein can probably tell you more. I would say this is a very important piece, because if they can't see that the data is functional and replicative in some way of their older system, then they won't trust the system that they're currently moving to. So it's imperative that we get that correct. And we spend a lot of time with the client making sure we understand these requirements.
Is that something some of your competitors do? Are they spending that much time up front?
You know, I think we actually do a better job of it. And the reason
that was
we do
a softball, by the way.
No.
also, Sean and I are both former Salsa employees, so
yes.
It's all coming together now.
It's all coming together. No, I think what we do better is from the very beginning, we wanted to do it the right way. And so we never knew that there was a light way and a right way in this industry. And we always only did it the right way, and we charge that way for it. It's a barrier for some, but the ones who understand what we're trying to do, it actually is pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of the organizations that are adopting you? You're saying right way, so it sounds like there's a little bit more of a commitment. That you know, you're establishing a relationship with them. You're doing a little more work from up front than maybe other people, but you're also expecting them to dig in their heels a little bit more. Not dig in their heels, but roll their sleeves up.
Yeah, it's cliche. It's whatever the right word is. You know, we're looking for people who understand that your technology is a partnership. Mm-hmm. They need to come to the table ready to do some of the hard work. People don't want to hear that sometimes. And it's unfortunate, but when they do it and they do understand what we're trying to do, they love it.
Can you talk about any of your clients?
Sure.
Any examples of people who you think have done that really well?
Our Wounded Warrior Project. We do everything for them. Adopt a Pet. Mm-hmm.
Toys for Tots.
Toys for Tots. They're amazing.
It was a great campaign. Yeah. That they've been running with us since, and their data implementation, I think Hossein kind of touched on it. I'm sorry I'm driving data, but that's kind of my specialty and what I enjoy talking about. But I think the way we're doing things differently at Charity Engine is that we do expect the client to come to us as a stakeholder as well. So in those initial meetings, we don't just say, give us your data. We say, who are all of these stakeholders? Who's the person responsible for X, Y, Z? And early on in the game, we kind of say, okay, we are equal partners in this. We are going to go 50-50, and in the end, we're going to make sure that this thing is fully operational the way you need it to be. I think, and I've worked not just at Salsa, but other CRM competitive software companies, and I've been doing this for a long time, and we do it differently. It's very intimate. That's the word I'll give it to.
It also helps. He brandishes a ninja knife sword, and he brings it to the first meeting. People are great partners when their life is at stake. It's spectacular.
He doesn't look that threatening.
Yeah, but he's not wearing his karate robe right now.
Yeah, I've got my Kevlar on under here. So.
I think one of the nice things is that because Charity Engine, and we haven't even talked about what the product is, so someone might be listening to this podcast and not be super familiar, but in the space that it operates, because it is able to touch on so many of the needs that your clients are probably looking for, you can actually really do a very robust, thorough, and holistic data migration and integration rather than being spread across multiple platforms, which right. No company wants to do that unless that's your business model. But it is not usually the business model of most of your competitors out there. They want to offer a product with little to no onboarding or ongoing support. Look at MailChimp. You will never talk to a MailChimp representative. I don't care if you've got a 5 million email list and you're ready to sign up today. You will not talk to anybody at MailChimp. But you know what? They were able to scale their company by offering a completely, essentially unsupported product. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for nonprofits. But you had mentioned earlier, Hossein, that one of the things is that you're looking for a partnership. And my own personal experience has been either nonprofits get that or they don't. They either see these types of software products as a commodity and they treat it as such, or they see it in a more traditional software sense where it's something that you're going to invest time into because it's going to pay dividends and you're not going to switch it in a year. So you don't think that you're going to go through a 6-month or even longer implementation process just to switch out, 12 months after that. You think, this is my 5-year plan at the very least, and where does migrating to this system come into play? So I think taking that approach also builds better relationships with your clients because you get to know them better. And you also get to solve more of their pain points than, trying to.
Did you guys go into this thinking or knowing that you would take that approach, or is that something that you kind of like once you built the software, you're like, well, actually, looks like we got to spend a little more time on this on the upfront piece?
I want to say we knew exactly what we were doing from day one. We were very, very, very forward thinking, but that's not the case. The reality is, like anything, we sort of fell into an opportunity. That opportunity grew and grew and grew. And then one day it was sort of one of those like Snickers commercials where you took the bite of Snickers and you suddenly had an awakening moment, if you will. And you're like, holy cow, this is what we should be doing and focusing in on. And from there, you could then argue that we made our own luck or whatever the word is. But it was probably a 6 or 7 year journey. Mm-hmm. From the day we started to talk to our first nonprofits to the day where Charity Engine was a product that was a full single platform CRM, online, offline database, EMS system, so we can replace MailChimp. What else do we do? A lot of stuff. What else do we do in that software there, Sean?
We list management, not just in the eBlast sense. We give a lot of forward thinking in terms of the database. Hossein kind of touched on this briefly, but we give the end user a lot more access control to the database than the average CRM does. I mean, our administrative tools are unmatched in terms of what you'll find out there on the market.
So you can do pretty complex reporting on your list.
Complex reporting through our query tool. You can segment your lists. You can do all kinds of things with your contact base. It connects all to a CMS if they choose to link up to that. And the robust power, especially if you are a data hungry organization, it's pretty amazing. A lot of our clients have figured that out in the last few months, just some of the capabilities in terms of what they can get out of the system, not just what they can put into it.
Yeah, that's a cool, it's really cool when they have that sort of moment of realization, right? When they're like, all right, maybe I did make the right decision by going with a smaller company. Mm-hmm. I took a flyer, and they are taking a risk because they don't know, we've been around for, almost 15 years, but in the nonprofit space, I like to say it's sort of like a sewing circle. People go from one nonprofit to the other nonprofit to this company that sells to the nonprofit, who sells this agency to the nonprofit, who does print for the nonprofit. And, it's like a large West Virginia family in the best way possible. I shouldn't say that. That's not nice. I love West Virginia. I love fishing. I'm sure they have other stuff there too. But that's the thing. Tubing. They're big for tubing, yes, too. Yes, yeah.
Harper's Ferry.
Harper's Ferry. That's right. But that's the thing. We're trying to do something different. We have a different way of talking about it. Can be received well. It could be received poorly. But once they start using the system, and they understand what they've actually bought, right? And we talked a little bit about this earlier. It does look like a Ferrari, but when they realize there's also a Ferrari engine in it, and what they can do with it and how the software can make them, what was the word you used, data-driven?
Mm-hmm.
The software can make them care about data. Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of cool. I don't mean to cut anybody off, but I thought of an example. This was about a month ago. I did a data conversion for a client, actually New Hope Ministries, and they ran their first peer-to-peer campaign, and within 1 week they raised $40,000.
Wow.
And they call it Walk for Hope. And a lot of that is attributed to our technology, sure, but that also attributes to look at the kind of dedication a 5-person staff can put together in 1 week. I mean, that says a lot.
And then did you guys help them? Like, did they call you?
On the support side, sure. You know, sure, we helped them. We helped them show them the tools. But in the end, they took their own sense of being, and they'd only been with us for about a week.
Yeah, it was really cool, actually.
Yeah.
That was a really cool experience.
Yeah.
There was, you know, we certainly will hold their hands. But one of the things one of the underlying principles we have in our software as a company, really, when we're selling software is there's sort of two ways to vocalize it, right? Or socialize it. Remember when I'm about a little bit over 40 years old, and I used to go to shopping with my mom at these strip malls. And she didn't want me bugging her when she was out shopping, like getting supermarket or whatever it is. And if you remember when you were a kid, there used to be these little horses or these cars right in front of the supermarket. You put in a quarter and the thing would shake back and forth for a couple minutes, right? And so it's coin operated. And I always say, I don't want to build a software company that's coin operated. We want to build the analogy we like to say is we want to teach you how to fish, right? So I think these two sort of combined tell you a little bit about what we're trying to build, how we build software. You know, building software is really, you know, to do it properly, you have to be really thoughtful about the future, right? You know, people look at Apple or pick a big company. You know, they built the Mac, then they had the iPhone, then they had the tablet, and then they had the watch. They couldn't have done any of that if between the time they built the computer and the phone, they didn't figure out a way to get all your data in one place, right? Once they got the data in one place, they were able to add new features, sell you more stuff. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're not to sell you more stuff necessarily, but try to build a software platform that's going to say, what's going to happen when all of your search and all of your donations are going to come because someone's going to talk to their phone and say, let's give Wounded Warrior Project, let's give Toys for Tots, let's give Culture of Respect $10. And it has to be able to, that's the next stage, right? We're talking to our devices. And nonprofits have to think about how search is going to change. When you search for a restaurant today, you type in Chinese restaurant Arlington, right? Or something like that. Mm-hmm. In the future, you're going to say Chinese restaurant across from the Giant in Arlington. And that search algorithm is different, and you need to start thinking about that today.
So the R&D team over there is busy developing the next generation of giving platforms?
Team. Well, that's why we brought Sean in. He is. It's the team when they get together. By the way, the whole team can drink a 6-pack of beer by themselves.
That's impressive. Well, you know, earlier you said that you kind of fell into this. I mean, you're a serial entrepreneur. The nonprofit space would seem like an unlikely place to start. How did this happen?
Really interestingly, actually, we had we were doing a e-commerce solution for a large publicly traded company. One of their employees went over to a nonprofit.
So you were developers basically for hire.
Yeah.
What year is this?
This is 2000. Where were we? 2009.
Okay.
Okay. At this point, just so you know, I'm an investor in the company. And with the partner. And this guy left this publicly traded company, large e-tailer, retailer, everybody would know nationwide, I think 800-900 stores. And they went to one of our current clients, and they were with, can I name who they were with?
Name anything you want.
I can say whatever I want. There's nobody with a... Hey, well, Sean brought his samurai sword, so I'm probably protected. They were with Blackbaud. Blackbaud had said, you know, to build this particular form was going to cost, you know, $7,000-$8,000. You know, he just decided to pick up the phone, gave us a call. We said, yeah, that's, you know, $200. Yeah, it was literally, yeah, we'll get that up. Now, it just so happened, this is where we kind of fell into it, right? The person had to leave. They happened to have gone to a nonprofit that was, at the time, very relatively small. It turned out that nonprofit was Wounded Warrior Project. As they've grown, as they've added and needed more stuff and have sort of removed and kicked other vendors to the curb, we've taken over those responsibilities. And today, they basically have all of their data peer-to-peer, EMS, direct mail. I mean, just about all of it sitting in our one's database. Donation history. We've got technology around recurring donations that are just really game changers. And we've got Sean with his sword, samurai sword, threatening them to be good partners. But they've been great. We've grown with them. And what happened is we were sitting there one day and we started getting phone calls. Hey, you guys do it for Wounded Warrior Project. They're fast growing. Can you do it for me?
Yeah.
And after the fourth or fifth or sixth time of someone calling us up, we're like, you know, the light went on. We're like, hey, we need to sell it to nonprofits. So we started calling nonprofits. They didn't take our phone calls. So we were like, why is that? We need to have a – because they want to buy from their own. So we took a product and we took our software and we called it Charity Engine. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, Charity Engine. I will say we sort of – steal a little bit of the thunder from Wealth Engine. You know, it sounds familiar.
Have you got any cease and desist letters from Wealth Engine?
I will now. But again, we've got samurai swords, so come at us, boy.
when did you join the company?
I joined the company 10 months ago. It's an interesting story. So I left Salsa in April of 2013, and Brian was still there.
How long have you been at Salsa?
I had been there for 2 years.
Okay.
And I went to a nonprofit. I went to the Society for Neuroscience and started helping them build a BI, a business intelligence solution, Data Mart, for all their membership needs. And about a year and a half into it, I get a message from Hossein. He had found me on LinkedIn and had seen that I had worked for Salsa and some other CRM companies, and I had the nonprofit experience, and asked me if I could just come in and talk. And I said, okay, sure. I'm always open to talking. And I was curious because I'd heard about Charity Engine. I had never really... I'd seen the website, I'd heard about it on Perks of Exchange, and I got curious, went in for an interview. Didn't really know what I was interviewing for.
But, did you know it was an interview?
I did know it was an interview. The chief operating officer at the time said, you know, really, really enjoyed talking to me, but he didn't really have anything. And about a week later, I got a phone call and said, come in for a technical interview, we want to talk to you. Now, it's a great company, Charity Engine. I will tell, and I'm saying this wholeheartedly.
But
it truly
hiring
is.
The process sucks.
Okay, I've been through a lot of interviews in my life, a lot.
We like to say it's terrible, and that sucks.
it was a 6.5-hour technical interview with.
Wow.
I didn't know at the time every executive can outcode me
but
and run circles around me.
You're all
however.
Computer science majors, right? Like all.
No, not me. I'm the stupid guy. I'm the business guy.
The guy that ended up I spent the most time with and still do, our COO, he has a master's from MIT.
Yeah.
Full scale. Had built platforms from the ground up since he was like, what, 19 years old? Been running these types of things?
12.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I remember when I looked up Charity Engine and I was like, oh, there are some of their C-level folks are developers. Like, this is a technically competent company.
Yes.
Like, they get it.
Yes. I walked out of the interview. I called now my then fiance, now wife, and said, I didn't get that job, but I learned a lot. I didn't get that job. And next morning I had an offer letter and I think I even emailed Hossein immediately. I'm like, I'm there. I'll take it. Just because I knew that this was the kind of environment.
You didn't tell the best part of the story.
Oh, well, I can let you tell that
part.
I think I had told Hossein, you know, yeah, I'm coming aboard. I'm really excited. And he sent me an email back and said, so you got to be prepared for some late nights. I thought he was half joking. There were some late nights, but I will say this. My first 6 months in this place, I've been a database developer for over 8 years. I've learned more in this 6 months probably than my first 4 years.
Wow.
It's amazing, and it's not the kind of learning that you shy away from. It was, and I probably sound like an infomercial, but this is totally true. I would get to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'd pick up my head, and it was 8 o'clock at night. And it wasn't a bad thing. It was like I was kind of in awe. I don't know if that was like my head was spinning the whole time or it was, and it still is that way to not that degree. I'm not there that late, but I will say that working there has been really, it's been a game changer. And I think most of my colleagues would agree with that.
So you guys have a pretty rigorous development process in place, I would imagine.
Well, it's agile. It's agile. However, we did hire an awesome CTO.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
He's really smart.
He's Steve is great. Steve Titus, our CTO, he's a great guy, and he's also the kind of guy, just like all the other execs, you can't complain working a 12-hour day when your bosses are putting in 16-hour days. So it's I mean, personally, I love it. I might be crazy, but I love it. I love the environment. I love the – Brian knows this.
I'm just looking at him, and you're not allowed to adopt that policy here at Foresight.
No, we don't.
But we're doing great things, but and that's the cool thing.
We don't build anything that complicated here. We just make things pretty.
By the way, I should mention both of you are very handsome.
It's true. Thank you.
So where did you develop your ninja skills then?
Interestingly enough, I took a job, my first job in tech, I took as a tech support representative 2004, and it was here in DC, and I deleted a SQL database over the phone, and the president.
Wait. How does that happen?
Like they were
you talking to someone?
Yes, they were hosting their own. It was actually a congressman's wife I was speaking to. I didn't know it at the time. Found out after the call. I was at a political software firm. Actually, still exists here in town today. And the president came up to me of the company and said, "You have 2 weeks to rebuild this from scratch. And if you don't, you need to find a new employer." So I went on the FEC website. I dug up every report this congressman has had since 1986, and I imported that data. And I wrote queries, and I got a SQL for Dummies book, and it's been ever since. So I guess I got to be thankful to that guy for giving me the
talking
ultimatum.
Talking about pressure.
Was it a Democrat or a Republican?
It was a Republican, and I worked at Salsa, so it's obvious where I lie on the chart. But it doesn't really matter. You know, at the end of the day, technology, it doesn't matter who you're helping, right? It matters in a sense that you have beliefs, you're a person, and you might feel a certain way, but at the end of the day, everybody should have access to technology. You really shouldn't focus on a party or everybody, if it's out there, whether it's a nonprofit, a political organization, everybody should have access to these tools.
Firehouse across the street, this happens. Pretty regularly.
I was saying, I think your car. Oh, no, that's right. Your car didn't have that kind of.
If they're stealing my car, it doesn't all require all that much technical expertise to steal that thing.
That is true. On the drive over here, Hussein said, "Yeah, you know, I would tell you if I knew the gas situation with this car, but the gauge doesn't work." So.
And he's your investor. That's
no. Let me just say one thing about this particular vehicle that brought us. It has seatbelts, working for the most part.
Airbags. Yes.
No.
It's
a 1983.
I was going to say it's an early 80s model.
1983 Jeep CJ7.
Whoa.
No top. I wasn't going to drive it today, as a matter of fact, but this morning I checked the weather. It said it's all sunny. And as we're driving here, I was like, I'm glad, because if it was raining, it wouldn't work. We wouldn't be able to drive it. And he said, "Is it because it doesn't have a top?" I said, "No, it's because it doesn't have windshield wipers."
I wish I was lying about that.
Yeah, it's actually true.
So for people listening, and they may be considering you know, a solution like yours or one of your competitors, I mean, what are kind of the things you look for in someone who would be an ideal client? Like we talked about sort of the commitment to roll up the sleeves. We talked about the fact that you're going to, you know, help them with their data. Maybe they've got their data all over the place, and if it's pretty complicated and it's in a lot of different places, then having someone like you guys who are experts in this probably is a big help. It's not just in, you know, MailChimp where it would be easy to export or something.
So, I think generally change, and not just changing software. You have to have an aha moment, right? You know, if you're
before they talk to you,
yeah, you don't want to convince someone that they need your software, because if you're convincing them, then the conversion process and the adoption process is that much more difficult. There has to be some thought leadership within the organization. But grab another beer.
I did this last time to our last guest. In the middle of a point, I just cracked a beer in it.
No, I insist.
You've done it again.
But I think the same
disruption.
But if you're going to open one, you should certainly offer your guest another beer as well.
This is Heavy's tagline, is to interrupt our guest with.
Yeah. No, it's great. I'd like one too.
Here's the sound.
It's charity.
Yeah, we learned last week that cans do not provide.
Bottles
do not provide nearly
cans
as pleasant.
The most satisfying.
Well, we had twist caps, which were really, really lame. So
I'm all right for right now. Thank you.
But the organization needs to be ready for the change. I imagine you're not going to convince a 22-year-old guy who lives in the city that they've got to buy a minivan. I mean, you would think that's crazy to even bother trying to sell a minivan to a 22-year-old. They have to, A, be at the right place, right time, have family, think that they want to get their dog Lucky into an easier type of situation. So it's the same thing with software. I mean, I think, companies spend so much money trying to sell software, and I just inherently think that's wrong, right? So that's the first thing you need. You need to have that aha moment. Second thing you need to do is...
What is that aha moment? It's, oh my gosh, we've got all these people and we're not getting anything out of that.
Sean probably can answer that better than me. What are the aha? Oh, go ahead.
Also add, what's the litmus to tell if your organization isn't ready? You might be ready, but knowing when you're ready and when you're not ready probably is important.
I think when you are, and Hossein, please feel free to chime in, when you are digging around on multiple spreadsheets, when you're opening up folders.
So just spreadsheets in general?
Or even not even spread. Maybe you're digging through a physical notepad and you're trying to arrange campaigns for getting potential donors, when you're trying to track people that you think might be able to help your organization, when your volunteer notepad has the beer stains from the night before that you were up working late, I think that might be an aha moment for a lot of organizations. Because we're not, we do have great technology, but we're not out there trying to wow people with all the bells and whistles. We're showing the fundamentals, and I think we're just pushing the limits. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart way of saying it. I mean, we've got cool stuff, but... It's the fundamentals that we do so well that really I think have been the differentiator for us.
Well, I want to actually point out my wow moment with Charity Engine, because when I was at Salsa, I was in a lot of competitive selling situations against y'all. But that's not what put you originally on my radar. In fact, Wounded Warriors is a project that's very near and dear to me, and is somebody who just loves technology. Anytime I see something cool, I always look at view source code or who did this, who designed this, and so I'm checking that out, and I see it's Charity Engine. I go to your site, and I start, first off...
Can I just say one thing? It's charityengine.net. We are not charityengine.com.
Also made that mistake.
You already made that mistake. Right, sorry. I assumed you would. I just want to go ahead and clarify for everybody. Yes. We are not running some sort of weird lottery system.
I do remember very clearly getting very upset that I had lost a deal to you, thinking you were charityengine.com. And I was like, this software looks like it's like from GeoCities. Like, I'm sorry if that person's listening to this podcast, but you need to update your homepage and remove like the under construction you get for whatever is on your homepage.
Or just sell the domain name to these guys.
We have
tried. Has there ever been confusion?
Every freaking day. Every day. I mean, it's
the lesson learned is .com is the golden. The golden standard.
Yeah. Not .biz.
Don't get .info or .xyz or nobody cares about those or ever will.
We were thinking of .porn when it comes out, just in case. You never know when these two things whirl.
Gotta be charityengine.porn. That sounds like a Pantheon project.
Oh boy.
Anyways, the wow moment though was actually looking into some of the work that you had done with Wounded Warriors, and apparently I knew the platform that was supporting their project before I knew it was yours, and that was actually managing their donation pages during a Super Bowl ad, which you say, people don't come to us for the bells and whistles and the wow factor, but like this is core infrastructure. And I've seen a lot of systems, and I'll throw back Blackbaud under the bus, because anybody that doesn't treat nonprofits right don't deserve respect, in my opinion, as a provider. And seeing
this could be a last podcast.
Yeah. Seeing Convio donation, even though they were a competitor of mine, in a previous lifetime, seeing Convio donation pages go down during end of year because they can't handle the volume, that's absolutely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And so learning about the work you did for Wounded Warriors and actually keeping their donation pages up during Super Bowl ads, like, that's actually really important. It's core infrastructure that you have to get right, and people don't really care about until it goes wrong.
That's interesting you said that, because it wasn't duct tape together. It was, we really had a good software and hardware sort of marriage there. It was a thoughtful design. What nobody will ever appreciate is that they got that ad a week and a half before the Super Bowl that was granted to them. And so we got that thing set up and firing on all cylinders in a week and a half. It was pretty cool. But
that was the long nights you were talking about.
Not me. I think that was that was probably Phil's long night.
Yeah, our CEO. He's on another tier, man. I mean, this guy is, you know.
So he's a developer by trade too.
He's a developer. He's just one of those guys where you're like, you'll see him interact with the people in a room, and I know him, and Sean knows him really well, and when they walk away, you're just thinking to yourself, these guys just didn't realize they were talking to one of those just unbelievably brilliant people, because he's just grounded and he's just a good dude. It's pretty amazing, actually.
And then if you talk code with him, he's firing all cylinders all the time. I think in his sleep he must just dream code. It's crazy.
He doesn't sleep.
That's true. That is true, Hussein. We have talked about that.
So you were talking about kind of the short-sightedness of a lot of the people out in the space here, and maybe, you know, envisioning, you're being a little facetious, but envisioning a future where people's interactions with nonprofits are hopefully going to be a little bit easier and seamless. What kinds of things are you guys doing now to make that a reality?
Well, I think it starts with the data. The way, you know, we're not going to know where the future is going to take us. But what we do know is that wherever that is, it all has to be in one place. So the way I sort of think about it is, my parents are immigrants, right? If you've ever been to a person whose parents are immigrants, you always have multiple refrigerators.
That's
right.
True.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
Or Italians, apparently, because I grew up in an Italian family.
Yeah. You have multiple refrigerators. And so when you're cooking, you have to go to this refrigerator and that refrigerator and this refrigerator. And then there's like, you say, your mom will send you to that refrigerator, but it's not in that refrigerator. It's in that refrigerator. And somehow she yells at you because you went to the wrong refrigerator. That is sort of what you have to solve first. So it's not that I know. I have vision into the future. What I know is that data has to be like a walk-in refrigerator, right? You got to have it all in one place so that later on, as it changes, grows, and how you interact with it, it has to be accessible from every angle in one place. So you can't have the milk here and the butter there. You have to have it all in one place. Mm-hmm. It's got to be convenient so that when you add the next thing, voice recognition, Google Glass, telepathy, I don't know, whatever it is, it's got to be able to have all access to all of that underlying data. And so we've solved that problem.
What are you guys on, a SQL database?
Yeah, we're a SQL Server 2012.
Moving okay. to 14.
So moving to 14 is the plan.
This actually opens up this might be a little too technical for some folks, but opens up, I feel like, a conversation that all nonprofits should have. And I'm just wondering what your process is for when you're working with a new client, and that is data hoarding.
Hoarding. Oh, okay.
I cannot pronunciate. You know,
it's because you're Italian.
It's true. It's true. You know, the classic example, and this is an actual conversation I had. There was a woman who worked for, and you can Google it if you want to figure out who the org is, but it's the third largest sporting event in the world. And they worked for the USA division, and they would track everything about their donors and supporters. And one thing they had was like golf foursome scores from the 1980s. And that was, not even kidding, like that was a must have for their new system. So I'm just wondering, as the person responsible for importing the data, mm-hmm. How do you have that and open up that conversation about, you know, we're going to put you on this new system where we're going to bring all the important data over, but, you know, what's your process for kind of figuring out what's actually mission critical and what is distracting from the process and really a waste of time.
Okay. So I think Hossein hit the nail on the head earlier. We went out and hired people that have worked in nonprofits. A number of those people are on our implementation team that we've been talking about here. And we do give counsel, but we're not a strategy firm. We're a software company. So we basically say, we have capacity to do this stuff and we can bring everything in. However, in our experience, sometimes it's best to bring in your operational data first so that you can be up and running. Historical data we could bring in later, or maybe it needs to stay on an Excel spreadsheet if you don't see yourself using it digitally, or it might just be a waste of space. We don't come out and say that bluntly. I would never do that. But I think we present it in such a manner because we do have people on staff that have been in this position before. And I think it's important for us to also listen to the client. We do spend an awful lot of time at the beginning doing that in post-sales. We really want to find out what's their culture. You know, how are they doing things? Because then, not because we have strategy, but we have people that know how to kind of maneuver, and we have people in business, we have people on the nonprofit side, we can kind of guide them through the process. But I don't think we're selling ourselves as a strategy firm by any stretch of the imagination.
Probably a really important mix, though. Just even hearing the same thing from people that have different roles will actually absorb into those, you know, those individuals differently. So being able to say, like, you know, I've been in your shoes, I worked at nonprofits and I've worked with nonprofits, and let's bring in your operational data first so we can get you set up, and then we'll revisit, you know, this other information 3 months, 6 months from now, and see if, you know, you really did need it.
If it's needed, absolutely. Yeah.
And there's another part to this, and maybe not exactly what you're asking, but as it related to data hoarding, specifically, we do come across people in organizations who aren't ready to, you know, one of the problems we solve, I guess, let me go backwards. One of the problems we solve is that, you know, just like the refrigerators, they ended up, you don't want your data siloed, right? You don't want your events people to have their data. You don't want your EMS, your communications people to have their data. You don't want your offline people to have their data. You need to have one set of data for your organization, right? So you do get people who, for whatever reason, protect their data. It's theirs. And if it were suddenly to be part of a single system that potentially maybe could be accessed by somebody in another division, they get really, really protective of that, right? And I think we have to overcome that, right? Because if you really want to see the power of the Charity Engine platform at work, you need to have all that data in one place. Mm-hmm. You can't decide to keep the butter in another refrigerator because that's what you've always done. You really, and again, this comes back to that aha moment. It's the selling the minivan to the 22-year-old. You have to be ready to understand that in 2015, you have to be data-driven. Mm-hmm. And to be data-driven, you have to have access to all of that data to be able to run the reports that Sean and his team are throwing out to our clients. It's pretty amazing. It's very different. For a lot of times, we get just kicked out of rooms all the time because they don't want to listen to what we have to say. We don't know what we're talking about. We're new to the industry. We don't really get it. We're not subtle enough in our sales technique. Our marketing doesn't really speak to them. The words we use in our software aren't perfect. And that stuff is, those are learning. Mm-hmm. We're getting better at it. But the core is we are a data company, and organizations that want to be data driven. Not to say that we are the best software, but if you're data driven, I really think we're the best software.
And every organization should be data driven.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Digital is the way to go now. And I think the other thing we do really well, we don't necessarily advise or strategize, but we help the clients figure out what are the right questions to be asked. And then our system provides the answers. We don't necessarily say you need to ask these questions. We present the system initially in the sales process. And as they're going through implementation, we kind of give them little cues and hints that as you're using the software, you might want to run this report. You might want to write this query. And I think it teaches them that they're going to get those answers if they know what questions to ask.
So what's the pricing like? How do I sign up? And what do I commit to?
For people who mention this podcast, they get 10% discount.
Or a sticky this one at the top.
That's right. If you say forecast in your contact form submission.
We have a couple different pricing models. We have a standard software as a service monthly subscription fee. We have for smaller organizations who are considering like a Salesforce, which gives them, which supposedly is a free solution. We
that,
actually
that must be your biggest competitor, really, right? I mean, think about it. If
Blackbaud.
You're
Blackbaud and Salesforce, yeah.
Well, I mean, but Blackbaud, I guess so.
At least my experience was Blackbaud was the biggest competitor because people hated it that were on it and wanted to get off. And then at the last minute would get cold feet.
Yep.
But you got like the old Blackbaud, like Razor's Edge and stuff, which
Sphere.
But I'm sort of discounting like, you know, kind of the Convio.
Blackbaud has over 30 products.
But
the problem
Salesforce
is they can cobble together
robust,
some.
I'm just thinking the Salesforce solution. Is a very robust, you know, single data source solution.
If you know Apex.
Yeah.
If you don't know Apex, then you're and there's not a lot of nonprofits that are going to invest to get somebody on staff that knows Apex. If somebody knows Apex, they're probably not going to work for a nonprofit.
I would say revisit Salesforce in 5 years and see where they're at with this NGO Connect. But right now, it is not an all-in-one database. It is integration with quotes around it.
Right. And I will tell you, Salesforce is going to get acquired. And it's going to get acquired by either Microsoft or Oracle. And my guess is Oracle because the CEO's, was it Blumenthal? Is that his name? The CEO of Salesforce and Ellison.
So it's no longer Larry Ellison?
No, Ellison is Oracle.
Oracle.
The Salesforce
guy. Oh, the Microsoft guy.
Scott Blumenthal, I think his name is. Maybe wrong about that. But they are, you know, they're buddy-buddy. And if Oracle buys Salesforce, and there's only a handful of companies who can afford Salesforce, right? I mean, you've got to have a lot of cash. Google, Facebook, SAP maybe. Microsoft, you got to have, you know, $100 million of cash or $100 billion of cash. That's a pretty big war chest. I think that's going to also change the direction. Now, if it's Microsoft that buys it, it's probably better for nonprofits, in my opinion. If it's Oracle that buys it, I mean, I just don't see that being really, really good.
Yeah, I will give a bump to Microsoft and what they've been doing for nonprofits. I mean, they are just giving their software. And not only that, they've been giving services and support away to nonprofits, and they should be commended for that.
Absolutely should be.
So there's sort of an entry level, which is just software as a service, and you can upload your lists.
Is that every future?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing. So I think that's what defines great technology, right? That it's infinitely scalable, both up and down, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a group based out of D.C. named Culture of Respect. It's two young ladies, or I think it's maybe even one young lady.
I think it's one, actually.
It's one. Mm-hmm. And they're tackling sexual harassment abuse on college campuses. They use the exact same system that Wounded Warrior and Toys for Tots use, which is hundreds of employees. And that tells me we've done it right. I mean, Apple doesn't have 16 different versions of the iPhone. Whether you use it just to make phone calls, text phone calls, apps, this, that, and the other, everybody gets the same version. And that's how you know it's a great software or a great solution from a technology standpoint.
How much for the single person with the passion project, how much are they spending?
In most cases, we're giving it to them for free.
And it was the same anecdote for Coca-Cola, right? That was, you know that when you go into a restaurant, you're getting the same Coke that a billionaire drinks.
Yeah.
And knowing that you're getting the same software that can grow to the size of some of your lighthouse organizations that you have, lets you know that you can actually invest in that platform and be secure in it. And so that's where people can buy in, whether they're starting with no list or, you know, they're spread across 13 different systems, but they're still tiny, but their data is all over the place and they need to consolidate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where do you guys see your future in terms of growth for what kind of clients are you looking at? Are you reaching outside of the nonprofit space? Or are you?
No, we really like the space. I think it's much more fulfilling than I thought it was going to be. It's nice to help people. And you don't, you know, I always thought I would never say that.
Say that with a lot of skepticism.
Yeah, I really did. I didn't want myself to believe that. But it's freaking cool, man. I mean, when you see someone who, you know, really wants to help adopt dogs or, you know, help, people who are, less fortunate than them or, help a wounded warrior. Or
help people reach out who have just recently found out they have ovarian cancer.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing. Yeah. I mean these people, you really it really makes you have to stop and say that, you know, maybe if I run into that person driving down K Street, they won't let me get in front of them and I'll probably flick them off. But you know, you have to realize that they, you know, there's a ton of people in this city. DC, I mean, this is a podcast, so I guess it could go anywhere in the world, who are so jaded and who in every aspect of their life, you're like, good Lord, I got to move to West Virginia because it's beautiful out there and people are so nice. Just to
we lost all the West Virginia.
Yeah, just one of the last
45 lessons. Minutes ago.
But then you realize a lot of these people are doing things that are really trying to push forward an agenda of making life for you, your kids, the next generation better. And it's like, you know, I kind of like to do that. I don't, you know, that's cool. And, yeah. and that's
it. I think we all share that, definitely. I mean, that's why Brian and I are doing this, and that has motivated my work for the last 15 years, too.
Who's your favorite nonprofit?
My favorite nonprofit is Foresight Interactive Studios because I don't make any money. my favorite 501c3 is that's a good question. There's a group called Rock Creek Conservancy. So I have a dog, Lucky, laying around here somewhere. I walk him in Rock Creek Park pretty much every day. And so I take advantage of the park, and I don't pay anything for it. And there's a nice group of folks called at the Rock Creek Conservancy, and they raise money and organize volunteers to, you know, clean up the park day, and just a local group, probably, I don't know, maybe 2,000 members or something, and they're just raising money for like the park in my backyard.
I think we ought to do this on every podcast. Who's your favorite nonprofit right now?
Yeah, that should be one of our standard questions. Like
that's good.
The five questions that we ask.
So we got to continue though. Go around the horn, and you're not allowed to name clients.
Fair enough.
Sean, you know, for me, and I was I did Model UN for yes, I was one of those nerds for 15 years actually.
You are one of those.
Yeah, I continue to be a nerd. Yes,
it does not leave you just because you get older.
It's gotten bigger and stronger.
It totally has. The UN Foundation. I'm a big fan of Ted Turner. I really like what he's done. I mean, you give an organization $1 billion and you say, advocate for everything that's going on internationally, teach kids education globally, act locally. I think it's a great organization.
Your Turner, my
turn. I'm getting stared at. We'll switch back over to me. I'm going to say two. One's obligatory, Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.org.
It's your former employer.
Correct? Yeah, I was well, not an employer. I was a member.
You're a member.
And then they decided to pay me.
And they decided to pay
me. But actually, City Dog Rescue, CDR, very important organization here in the DMV, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, helps rescue dogs. And they actually have a fundraiser happening a couple blocks down the road tonight. I will be swinging by on my way home. But if you're looking to adopt or looking to support an agency that helps take dogs out of kill shelters, CDR, City Dog Rescue, very important organization.
My turn?
Your turn.
I'm not going to go with a dog one, though. I love DARE, which is a Doberman rescue. But I'm going to go with IACC. I'm on the board of it. It's a group, stands for Iranian American Community Center. We're trying to build a community center for Iranian Americans where we can showcase and help Iranians who come here, social services, help promote the arts among young Iranians.
A physical center,
Yeah, we're trying to build a physical center, yeah.
Where?
when we have enough to be seen. We are using Charity Engine's our own software as well, so we're eating our dog food, which, by the way, has helped us, you know, give us ideas on how to improve it. But it's been really interesting, you know, because, you know, we had a we have a board meeting where all the people can come to your to question your finances, and we stand up there, and people really are passionate and about this and about you know, Iraq war or dog kill shelters or the Model UN or the Rock Creek. And I think that that is that's inspiring. And so, you know, on a daily basis, you know, it just, it's on the back of your head, and things you can do better for your little corner of the world.
Well, I think that's a good note to end on. Brian?
We got to ask where folks can find you. If they are interested in Charity Engine or want to poach Sean, you know, anything.
No, I'm unpoachable now.
He's unpoachable. He's unemployable.
He's working 24/7. You cannot get a hold of him.
I check all of his emails.
Call Hossein if you want to get a hold of Sean.
I check all of his emails personally. Unless you're paying a finder's fee, in which case he's very, very available.
Sean is newly married. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yes, I'm 3 weeks in. So I'm still in that honeymoon phase.
I tried to avoid sending you all emails during your honeymoon, which is probably the most useful thing ever to come out of Facebook. Was like, oh, Sean's still out. Let's hold off on contacting him.
Well, thank you.
Did you go on a honeymoon?
We did.
Where'd you go?
We went to Spain and Morocco. Actually, I was telling Hossein all about my adventures in Morocco and how I think it's a lovely place, but I may not be returning ever again.
No, it's too shady.
It's his West Virginia.
It is wild and wonderful. I will say that.
We should exchange stories. That was my experience in Puerto Rico.
Okay, yeah, definitely
Puerto Rico.
Yeah. It's like a, it's like basically like being stuck on a cruise ship.
Alienating vast swaths of our listenership.
Oh, that's funny.
So you guys are on the Twitters. You guys are
Charity Engine, hashtag Charity Engine US. You can also find us at charityengine.net.
Is that because the other Charity Engine
took
the first one?
Yeah, we've tried. Please. I think you'd also, apparently now we're going to have to buy charityengine.porn, but I don't own it quite yet.
.ninja.
You can call us. You can send us mail. You can come to our offices in Tyson's Corner. Come up to the 15th floor. We've got, we're grilling tomorrow.
Oh, you guys have a nice view.
We do. Well, we have
Hossein is a great griller, by the way. We actually had a recent client who signed with us that he requested a meeting with me and said, I'll only come in if Hossein grills. And he totally did a spread. It was awesome.
I have a question for you. What's the best Persian restaurant in town?
In town? So honestly, there aren't that many great ones. The two best ones, one's in Vienna, called Cafe Rose, and the other really good one is in Rockville called Yekta.
Where's that?
It's Rockville, near Rockville Town Center.
Okay.
If you want sort of
the Rockville Pike?
On the Rockville Pike. And if you want sort of our version of fast food, Moby Dick is probably the most popular one.
That's why I eat there all the time, because it's right across the street from my kids' daycare. So my wife picks it up on the way home.
Okay. So we do the next follow-up podcast next to the grill. That is it.
Yeah, yeah, on the 18th floor of the – do you grill on the roof?
So you're on the top
We're
top
on the 15th floor? Yeah, you should come.
Yeah.
Who's below you? Who has to deal smelling that
It's interesting. We actually share the suite with Sahori.
Yep.
Insurance and financial, and they also have a nice little setup. And so one of us are always grilling, so you always smell some delicious meat, you know, at some point.
That's only fair, though.
Yeah.
No, we got lucky. We've got a great office. We got a great view. We got great employees, and we've got great neighbors. And
are you hiring right now? This podcast will probably go out in the next couple –
absolutely.
Next week,
yeah.
If Brian gets on his game, he can have this up on Monday.
Yeah, probably.
We've got we've got six open recs right now. We're looking for developers.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for
6-hour interview with Sean.
No, we learned our lesson.
Technical project manager. We're looking for
technical project manager, a QA person. We're looking for
front end developer.
What's that?
Front end configuration.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Someone to help us build our web forms. It's a big part of our business.
Awesome. Everything on the internet goes through a form at one point or another.
And we are hiring. We're growing really quickly. We were named Inc. 5000, one of the fastest growing companies in the U.S. last year. We'll make the list again this year. We are up for the Deloitte Fast 500. It's been amazing. And I joked about it earlier, but the industry has really been warm to us, and they love what we're doing, and that's pretty freaking cool too.
That's great. Well, good luck, guys, and thanks for swinging by.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.